been asked to say some things, and I figured I would just tie them all together instead of doing two or three different talks. The first thing is the fact that church holds certain beliefs. Obviously, these beliefs go right back to Jesus, the early church. The church around the end of the first century, the beginning of the second century, held a group of beliefs that we call the Apostles' Creed. The Apostles' Creed was not written by the apostles, but it takes what the apostles and the early teachers of the church put forth as the things that people needed to believe if they are going to be followers of Christ. We didn't call them dogmas or anything because we didn't talk that way, but it was basically taking what we would call those who are studying the faith, the catechumens, would learn and hold on to as we got into the second century. It basically just tells us about Jesus, the church, what he did. And the only mention it makes that Mary was the mother of Jesus. It doesn't go any further than that. It was that way for a while. Around the end of the second, beginning of the third century, a priest by the name of Arius came out and taught that Jesus was not really human. He was God, but he was not even really God. He was a representative that God sent. He came down and he lived his life as kind of a spirit and went through the stuff. He really didn't die on the cross. He really didn't need to rise from the dead. He was more of a spirit dressed up as a human being. And so the church had a real problem with that heresy. By the time the Nicene Council was held, the first council in Nicaea, they rewrote the creed, not because there was anything wrong with the Apostles' Creed, because they still used that. But they wanted to make definitive the understanding of what the Catholic Church truly believes, and that God is Father, Son, and Spirit. One substance. I don't think they like the word modalities, but we say persons. But the fact of the matter is that God is represented in three persons, three divine persons, but one God. And so they wrote the Nicene Creed to get across to the fact that the Father did not just create this spirit, but that the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit were all God. And as a matter of fact, later on, about 381, they had another council meeting, Constantinople, and they added the word filioque, which means "and the Son," because they wanted to make clear that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit all work together. In other words, one of the problems that developed is that the Holy Spirit proceeded from the Father and not from Jesus, and they wanted to get that understanding clarified. I think the Eastern churches have quibbled about that a bit, but nonetheless, Constantinople came out and said, we understand that the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son. And basically, it is the experience of the Father and the Son love, so that the Holy Spirit is the manifestation that the Father and Son have, that is their love for one another. And this love is the love that produces life. So it is through the Father and the Spirit and Jesus that creation comes about because of this life-giving relationship that they have for each other. So the thing is that in those situations, assumption is still never brought up. And they still said that Mary was the mother of Jesus, and they don't go any further. But as things moved on, there were those who did not accept what the church taught about Mary. Because of that, they started to question the common belief at the time of Mary's assumption. We don't have any written documents. It's not in the Gospels or anywhere that Mary was assumed into heaven, but it was a belief. And it was a common accepted understanding that Mary, when she died, was taken to heaven. There's two stories that go with that. I don't know which one is true, but it says that Mary, when she passed on, they don't know whether it was in Jerusalem or Ephesus, but when she passed on, some of the apostles that were still alive did not get there for her burial, and they came and they said they wanted to look upon Mary one more time, and they opened the grave and or the tomb, and Mary wasn't there. The other story is one of the Christian emperors in Rome wanted to bring the body of Mary to Rome. And he asked the Pope that, you know, they could go and bring Mary to Rome. And when they opened the tomb, she wasn't there. So I don't know which is the truer story or which either one is true. But the reality is that they did experience the fact that Mary's physical body was no longer on this earth. This was a common belief. From early on, it was believed, and the date was August the 15th, that they would celebrate this early on in the church. Then, as the Protestant Reformation came in, they began to downplay the role of Mary in the church. One of the things was that they just said that Mary wasn't taken up, and she was like everybody else, a human person. She died, and they buried her. She has to rise from the dead when Jesus returns. So the church fought that. They still proclaimed that Mary was given a special privilege at her conception, that she was conceived without original sin because she was to be the mother of Jesus. And that her womb would be, as her person was, free from any kind of sin, and that she lived her whole life that way, without committing any sin whatsoever. So that when she passed from this life, it was God's privilege and choice and decision to take her to heaven, body and soul. And so that her physical being went up there, not only because she was who she was, the mother of Jesus, but it was also as a way of reminding us that this would have been what would have happened to us if Adam and Eve had not sinned. In other words, God's plan was that we would live our life here on earth, and when it was time to come home, we would pass from this life directly into heaven, body, soul, and spirit. But man sinned. And because of that, he had to wait before he could get into heaven. Mary, on the other hand, being absolutely faithful to God in all circumstances, God chose to take her up to heaven. That was God's choice. That's why it's different than the ascension. The ascension is Jesus taking himself up to heaven. It's time for me to go, goodbye, and up he went. The assumption is the fact that God came along and said, I will take Mary up into heaven. So it is, she was assumed, that is, she didn't take herself up, God took her up. That's what we mean by the assumption. She has manifested herself time and time again. The church buys into all of that, buys into her purity of sin, her absolute faithfulness to God. As a side, we know that she, when she visited Elizabeth, who was going to have John, that her presence with Jesus in her sanctified John, so that John is the only other person before Adam and Eve, after Adam and Eve, the only other person born without original sin, that he was already baptized. He was conceived with it. Mary was not conceived with original sin. John the Baptist was conceived with original sin. But with the presence of Mary and Jesus, John received this grace of baptism where he leapt in the womb of Elizabeth. The church, however, you may hear this sometimes, but the church, however, this was kind of just an aside, but the church, however, has never stated that John, even though he was given special privilege and he was absolutely faithful to God, the church has never made any kind of statement about whether John ever committed personal sin. Some people believe that he did not, that he was very much like Mary. Others would say that even though he was born without original sin, he still had that original sin when he was conceived, and so that it's very likely that he may have told a lie or two or something, you know, whatever, who knows. But the church has never defined that. The church, however, because of all that was going on after World War II and things like that, Pius XII decided to absolutely define the Assumption of Mary as a doctrine that we are called to believe as Catholics. He did that after the war, and when the Korean War was about ready to break out, I think he wanted to give some extra emphasis to the rosary by telling and reminding us of the powerful influence that Mary had. So in 1950, he wrote an encyclical telling us that this is one of our defined dogmas in our belief, that when Mary died, we're not talking time, but just that when after Mary died, God took her to heaven, body and soul. And there she is. I think with the many different apparitions we've had about Mary, it's pretty obvious that we're not blowing in the wind here, but that this is a true understanding that Mary is a very powerful intercessor for us, not only for what she did, but also in heaven, and that we have been given this tremendous privilege. And so I think it's good that we sometimes think about all that God has done for us. When we think about Jesus, we know what his work was, but I think we fail to realize that part of the reason that Mary was what she was because she entered into the very life of Jesus. You know, that she wasn't standing off to the side. She knew that when she said to her son, "Turn this water into wine," or "Help this couple," she knew she was starting something that was going to be very painful for her. And she was faithful to that, and she entered into that, and she gave herself to that. And I'm sure it was tough for her even when Jesus ascended into heaven. Who knows, maybe he visited her. We don't have any stories like that, but that'd be between her and Jesus. But the fact of the matter is that after living her life here, John was supposed to have taken care of her, that when she died, her son took her home to be with him forever.